Welcome to the Keto Geek Podcast. Let's do this.
Health, nutrition, fitness, low carb lifestyle.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Keto Geek. We have Luis Villasenor. Did I pronounce that correct?
Yeah, that's perfect, Fahad. Thank you for having me.
Yep, and you're on board. I am so happy to have you. I really wanted you to be one of our first few guests on the podcast, and the reason is because of your community. Your Keto Geeks community is something I follow myself, respect. Everybody who is, at least the administrators, the main people that you have on board, are one of the smartest people that I know. You guys follow concrete scientific facts. And in a way, I think of you guys as my sort of gurus. And sometimes I even blindly follow what you guys have to say. And additionally, just to even brag more about you guys, your Keto Gains macro calculator is a rock star in the keto world. That's what I think. That's what I recommend everybody. If you guys go to my group as well, you'll see that Keto Gains calculator is amazing. So Luis, One of the things that I wanted to talk about is actually you. So my question here right off the bat is, unless you want to add something, do you want to add something before we start?
No, Fahad, we can start when you want. Actually, I don't know if you have any particular questions regarding me that you want to address. Probably my story is usually that people are curious about on why did one start keto in the first place, or why do you do keto for bodybuilding, but I don't know what you have in mind.
Well, my question here was, I treat everyone who I meet like a friend. So how did your journey get started when it comes to keto?
Well, basically, keto was like a side effect of trying to emulate what classic bodybuilders did. When I was a kid, I was chubby and overweight, and I wasn't very fond of sports, especially those that aren't team-based. I'm more like the classic nerd who spent his time playing video games, reading comics. I'm very introvert, really, and I also like to learn and read and research a lot. So I always ask myself the why on things and love to understand how anything works. So if I get an idea stuck in my head, I will try to either look for it, at that time I used Encyclopedia Britannica or, you know, similar forms of research, because there was no internet back then. And then one thing that I always liked, you know, I said comics. I wanted to look like those superheroes. So that led me, eventually to strength training and bodybuilding. And even though I started, you know, that you buy fitness magazines and then you realize that some of the things that they say doesn't really make any sense, because they suggest one approach in one issue and then in the next one they suggest something completely different. So for me, some of the advice given there didn't make any sense, but yet I was looking at guys who were like huge and jacked and ripped. So apart from the training, which I did, and that started to like give results, the diet part, it's something that you don't really get to, like the little details there. So I started researching more in detail, and I bought a few nutrition books. And also at that time, internet was starting to boom. I started researching there to see what the actual bodybuilders did, for example, to prepare for a contest. And that led me to Lyle McDonald and his book, The Ketogenic Diet, which I really, at that time, I was not really overweight anymore. I was more like, let's say, strong and chubby, but not what you call overweight. So I didn't really want to use the diet as to lose that much body fat, but more so to get like a contest prep. I wanted to do it for myself to see what you actually needed to do. And I found out that by doing the diet for myself, it was a very sustainable diet, because the diet proposed is something that I was, first, it was easy for me, and second, it was more the kind of food that I normally ate and that I actually liked. So for me, it was very easy to follow it.
And that's your narrative, that it is one of the easiest, one of the easier, at least, diets to follow through and through. So how did... Yeah, go ahead.
It's easy if you have... first, if you like the food, and then if you are, let's say, open a little bit in your mind. Because if you come from a high-carb diet where you eat pasta, pizza, you know... sodas, lots of donuts, you know, all the comfort food we eat nowadays in any big city, the transition is going to be a little bit hard. If you come from a diet where you eat whole foods and lots of vegetables, adequate protein from real food, there's not going to be such a big issue in regards to what you can and what you cannot eat.
Okay. So how was the transition from just being by yourself? What was the, how did keto gains begin? What was the spark there?
Well, basically, let's say that I lived my bodybuilding life and diet life in secret for the most part. Like if you knew me in real life and you saw how I ate and what I did, like training, I've always trained by myself. None of my friends really do anything sports related. So it was something that I either did in the mornings or late at night before going to work or et cetera, right? And then the diet issue is that if you went to eat with me, I'd probably be the guy who orders a salad and a steak. And while everybody else was having pizza or whatever the restaurant offered, but like everybody knew I liked strength training. So they just were used to the fact that I would eat like a bodybuilder. But for them, eating like a bodybuilder would be eating salad and chicken or steak or so, right? So apart from being like undercover, over time I started being more in the internet. And then one day I was on Reddit looking for stupid things like one always does on Reddit. And I stumbled upon the keto board, which is one of the biggest keto boards in the internet. And I saw the board and I said, well, this is what I normally do. It's sort of the diet. But as I started reading the posts, it was more of a weight loss forum. And then there were some people asking questions about cyclical ketogenic diet, which is the diet that normally bodybuilders use, or some advice in strength training and et cetera. And upon reading those posts, I saw that most of the advice given there was basic either bro science or just inventions that people want to participate and say whatever, but that has not any sort of basis or anything to back it up. And so I started commenting and trying to help people. And over time, the advice like started to get people results. So instead of staying there and confuse a little bit of the people, because as you know, there are a lot of people who do the keto diet for different reasons, and not everybody wants to do it for strength training or to become a bodybuilder or to just lose body fat. They just want to probably, they understand keto in a different way. As you know, there's a therapeutic approach to keto or the classic approach in which everybody uses ratios instead of micrograms, etc. So as to not confuse people, we decided, I say we because that was a thing we talked with another moderators in the group. It was better for me to open like a new board that focused more on the health and body recomposition parts of keto. So that's basically how Keto Gains was born.
And you guys have a lot of really cool people on there. And I think Tyler is also one of the people that I really sometimes hit on him, as in I communicate with him quite often. And I follow a lot of his posts that crawl on my Facebook as well. So you guys have a really solid community over there.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I'm really impressed with as far as Keto Gains, your community is concerned, is the success rate and how ripped a lot of people that you guys have. So what do you think is the success that, what are the factors that are making it a really successful community?
Well, the main thing is, first, that like I said before, we don't go by what the traditional keto model is. People understand a ketogenic diet by definition as a diet which is normally 70 or 75% fat, 20-25% protein, and the rest is carbs, which is usually end up at 5%. But people always go by diet definition, but they never really related to calories, and they never related to how what that actually means. So that approach was designed to treat epilepsy. And normally when you use percentages for a diet, they're just averages using, let's say, maybe a 2,000 calorie diet, or depending on what model people are using or the scientists who developed the model. People don't ask why or where those numbers come from. So people are also, they just go by those numbers like if they were gospel, as if you eat less fat, you're not going to be ketogenic. Or if you overconsume protein above 25%, you're not going to be ketogenic. They don't really know how do you get into ketosis. And to actually enter into ketosis, you just need to ingest less than 30 grams of carbohydrates a day for most people. Some people can ingest a little bit more. Some may need less. But basically, you enter ketosis by what you don't eat, not by what you eat. So again, there's this false pretense or belief that eating fat is what makes you enter ketosis, and it's not so. It's more so not eating carbohydrates. And then there's no sense in eating a lot of fat to have more ketones, because people also think that ketones are the ones that make you lose weight, and no. Ketones are more so a byproduct of burning fat. And it's better to burn your own body fat when your goal is to lose body fat than to ingest dietary fat and then make ketones from the dietary fat. I don't know if you follow the idea.
I do. And your quote, which is the protein is a goal, fat is a lever, and carb is a limit. I think
exactly.
I love that. And that's one of the things that I always advocate practically everyone. And it just makes sense that, you know, if you have eaten to satiety on your protein goals and your goal is to lose fat and you don't crave anything else, then don't consume more fat and you'll be satiated and you're going to be losing weight.
But that's one thing. And another thing that also people, I think there's also like a belief that when you are on keto, you should not be hungry. And yes, keto is a diet that, because it's you are low on insulin, or more so your insulin levels are stable, you really don't feel that much of a hunger or cravings. But doesn't mean that you will not experience hunger ever. That's also that's a myth. If you're on a diet and you are on a caloric deficit and you are doing any kind of exercise or not, depending on the calories you ingest and also on the combination of the actual food you eat, there's a chance you're going to get hungry eventually. And there's a big difference between being hungry, like really hungry when you get hunger pangs, or having cravings. And the cravings you will have to control and endure. And the hunger, well, sometimes, and depending on your body fat percentage and your goals, and how fast you actually want to reach them, you will also have to endure hunger. Like, it's normal to experience hunger, and it's also good to experience a little bit of discomfort. This is not, like, if it was so easy, everybody would do it, right? And everybody would be getting results. It's going to be easier, probably, than a high-carb diet, where you have these insulin spikes and, energies, a drop of energy, etc. But in the end, it really depends on the person. And again, you will experience hunger eventually. It doesn't have to be now or tomorrow. You may not experience hunger at all if you are one of those lucky ones. But feeling hunger is okay. There's nothing wrong if you're experiencing it. And to answer actually the reason why I think some people or a lot of people are having success with our protocol, is basically first because we try to support everything with with facts and science. And the second is because we say things as they are. If you go to other groups, they're more like support groups where people go, oh, I've cheated. And everybody goes, oh, it's okay, nothing happens. Eat more fat. Or I'm not losing weight, eat more fat. And here we say, no, you cheated. Well, first, we don't like cheating posts. Just move along. This is not a confessional. And then the other thing is, if you're doing things wrong, we're going to tell you. And people often don't like to be corrected. But eventually, what we get your results is doing the things right, not doing things as you want them to be, or having cheats here and there and don't expect to get the results you want, right? If you're overspending your money and then you want to buy a car by the end of the year, I don't think you're going to be buying a car, right?
Yep. And I think I stand right behind with you guys on this matter. And I think personal accountability and a little bit of discomfort is part of life. Even if I look at it from a very philosophical point of view, which is how I approach this, how can you value comfort and happiness if you don't suffer through discomfort and unhappiness? You need the negatives to actually understand the value of the importance. So, and plus, when you actually drop your weight and start feeling good about yourself, it starts building this momentum within you. And one of the good things that you have in your community is those specific days, I think Flex Friday, for example, where people can actually feel good about themselves. These are your incentives. It's not, oh, I'm going to cheat that day. No, that's not the reward. You're seeing results as the reward. That's what matters. I think that's very important. Just to kind of go into one of the topic that is very controversial among some of the people who have been reading about keto, gluconeogenesis. And I think you know where I'm going with this. Do you want to pick on this?
Well, we do have a very lengthy post on this on Keto Gains. For anybody who wants to read all the details, you can go to ketogains.com and write on the search bar gluconeogenesis, and you will probably get two or three blog posts about this. But to not bore you with all the details, is that people often, let's say that, try to simplify things without actually understanding the actual context. And they just see a number and they get afraid because they probably heard something somewhere from an internet guru that too much protein converts into glucose and then basically turns into body fat, or that it makes you either stop being ketogenic or it makes you not lose any more weight. So there are two things to consider. First, the goal is to lose body fat percentage, not really lose weight. Yes, of course, you're going to be losing weight when you lose body fat, but you could also be gaining muscle if you are eating correctly and if you are strength training. So then the actual amount of weight you weigh really is not that important, or is not the only marker to follow and take care of. So imagine that you are an overweight woman that has been malnourished for a while, and then you start to actually eat about the required protein for your body. Your body has, let's call them, set points in which when you are malnourished and then you supply the necessary nutrients, even if you are not strength training, just by eating adequate protein, your body will build a little bit more muscle. So this can cause you to maybe gain a little bit of weight. But if you actually check your body composition, you could have been losing body fat and gaining muscle. And thus, even if you gained 1 or 2 pounds, you look visually leaner and your clothes feel better, and you in the end lost body fat. So that's one thing to consider. People don't have to go just by one marker. Then the other thing is regarding gluconeogenesis. People get afraid again of eating too much protein, but nobody knows what too much protein is. And too much protein in a case would have to be way much that anybody would eat in a single sitting or in a single day for it to actually inhibit fat loss. So if you have someone who is eating 30 grams of protein a day because they're afraid of gaining body fat because of gluconeogenesis, when this person, just by formulas, should be eating around 80 to 90 grams of protein a day just to maintain basic function and of their body, as well as have enough amino acids to repair and build muscle tissue. Imagine that. You're under-eating way more, and you're not even meeting your basic requirements. You're afraid of eating protein when you're not actually meeting them. That's not too much protein. People see 100 grams of protein and then they think that's too much, right? So it brings us down to one of my favorite words, which is context. Maybe 100 grams of protein may be, let's say, a little bit on the higher end for someone who is very small and is not doing any kind of strength exercise. But it can be adequate for someone who is a little bit bigger, or even in this case, too little for someone who is very muscular, big, and strength training for an hour a day. So it's not just looking at, you know, blanket numbers, but more so looking at the numbers and then how did that number applies to a personal context.
Got it. So now that we've clarified the gluconeogenesis for a lot of people, I think this is like beating a dead horse in your community. Every time someone points out gluconeogenesis, there's like, read the pinned post, read the Reddit forums. So it goes into chaos mode over there, which is...
Yeah, and it's not because we don't want to teach people, but because it's an overly complicated thing that really you cannot explain it in, you know, 5 sentences. And some people get angry about it, but if you really want to know the answer, it's better to get the whole information with all the facts than just if I go and tell you that, no, it doesn't happen like that, and you have the facts from another source. The better thing and the same thing to do would be to read both sides of the story and then apply, you know, an informed decision from your part on what is the most logical answer, and then double check and elsewhere and see who has it right. You don't have to trust either us or the other side of the story. You can look in the internet and see what actually science says.
Yeah. So another question that I wanted to ask was, there's the hormonal theory of weight loss and weight management, and then there's the calorie in, calorie out. Now, I would imagine, just my from my little understanding, from very little research, that it's a factor, it's a combination of both. Where do you guys stand on this?
Well, you said it. It's a combination of both.
Okay.
Like, so the body has, you know, calories in and calories out is just a very basic understanding of how the body handles energy. But the reality is that the body really doesn't use calories. The body uses ATP.
Okay.
So that's maybe a word some people are not familiar about, but ATP is basically the currency of the energy currency of your body. So the body really doesn't burn things like if it was a furnace. Each macronutrient has a purpose. For example, we talked about protein, and protein is really not an energy source. It can make energy from protein, but the body does not want to use protein as energy. It's very inefficient. So you have protein to build and repair. Then you have carbohydrates, which are a fast energy source. I mean fast because they're very easily metabolized and inexpensive. And then you have fats, which are like as more long-term energy, or your body can store them as for energy as a future use. So this is the part about calories. Then the part about hormones is, if your body is healthy, they almost make their job, and you know, your body can use and expand and ingest energy easily. So it's like imagine a car that works perfectly. All the parts work in unison to make everything work. If your hormones are a little bit decalibrated, let's call it like that, then you may have some issues where you ingest calories and then your body doesn't really, it cannot harness that energy correctly. So it just stores them. So there's a down regulation in there. It's very hard to actually see which hormones are the ones that may be wrong. So the best thing that one can do first is to start with the basics. And we use a KISS approach, which is keep it simple, silly. Instead of starting, for example, when your goal is to lose weight, instead of starting and complicate your life and everything by trying to fix your hormones, the easiest way that you can do to fix them as well, but to lose fat, if that is your goal, is to eat at a caloric deficit while you are eating whole foods. And that will basically kill two birds with one stone, because most of the things that are hormone related are due to some basically either being malnourished and you're missing a micronutrient, or by stress, or because you may have an inefficiency that can be in most cases fixed by diet.
Yep. And kind of want to plug a little bit. There's that book, I think Rob Wolf wrote recently, Wired to Eat, which I really, really love. And the concepts in there are just gorgeous, where you practically hit a little bit of a reboot and then learn your body about how everything works. And I just love that approach. And I think that's how I think of ketogenic diet as well, is carbs are not really the enemy of the universe, but it allows you to sort of initiate a self-repair mechanism of some sort, where you can learn more about yourself and treat your body like you should. So go ahead.
Yeah, it's a big puzzle. So if you start eating correctly whole foods, eventually you really don't have to be concerned about, for most part, of course, what's actually wrong, because it will fix by itself.
Okay.
Most of the issues we have today with either some diseases or in the case of gaining a lot of weight is because we are eating foods that we are not designed to eat, or not. The human body has not evolved yet to be able to use this food correctly. So either you get sick, or then you get fat, or you don't have energy, etc. Yeah. If we go back to eat like a whole food that is like in the best state possible, like everything balances itself automatically. You start losing weight, even if you were not to count calories to a point, and then you can also get healthier. Like, but even Rob agrees in the part that there comes a time where you may be better if you start calculating and counting your macros. And we've seen this with a lot of persons who first start doing the diet. You can lose weight without actually counting macros, but it works, like we say, until it doesn't. You will lose weight to a point. And also it depends a lot if you have any relationship with food. You cannot expect to lose weight by eating whatever, whenever, or even if it's a ketogenic diet, if you just keep eating like for whatever all the time, right? You have to learn to listen to your own satiety levels. And this can happen naturally for some people, but for some people it can't. So you have to always review. If you're not losing weight, then maybe you can start counting your macros, and maybe you will have better results that way.
And so here's my question. Everybody is losing weight. For a person like myself, I've never had the challenge of losing weight. So I've always missed out on that battle and struggle, which in a way makes me feel bad, because I want to help other people, but I just haven't had that experience. So what's wrong with me? Why can I just eat everything and still remain at a pretty good body fat percentage? I mean, what am I doing wrong here?
You're not doing anything wrong. We have to remember that everybody has, like, we are the same species, but also our genetic markers are different. So you may have either genetically wise or hormonal wise or enzyme wise, etc. You may have different things that make you burn or more efficiently calories, or this may also be inefficiency in a way. Why? Because, for example, food is digested since the moment you eat it in your mouth with the saliva. It's basically the process starts with enzymes. So there are some people that have better enzymes, and it makes food digestion better. Are people who like take longer to digest, and this affects how much calories you can get from certain foods or nutrients. right? You have people going to, it's a little bit, maybe too much information, but you have people going to the bathroom twice a day or just about after they eat. And then you have people who go every 3 days, and that's normal for them. You cannot compare. Everybody is different in this regard, but it's good and normal for them. So there are people who absorb more nutrients and there are people who absorb less, right? So just as there are some people who have a very hard time losing weight, there are people who have a very hard time gaining weight or building muscle because they absorb nutrients at a different rate.
Okay.
So what can you do about it? Well, if you want to gain weight, it basically means, and you're not gaining it, basically what it means is that probably you are eating a little too less or too little for what you would require. And the same happens inversely to people who are taking out being hormones and everything else out of the question. If you are, you have a problem with losing weight, likely you are ingesting more energy that you require, right?
Got it.
So that's the first thing to address. Then there's also other things like people who are overly anxious or nervous also move a lot more than those who are probably on the counterpart, they don't lose weight. And this is something that you don't notice, but this is called a NEAT effect, and it's a non-exercise activity thermogenesis. People who are moving a lot without actually noticing are spending more calories per day than someone who is not. You could be sitting all day and, you know, fidgeting your fingers or tapping your food and so on, and you don't notice, but you're expending calories there. And people who are a little bit more fat don't do those things.
Maybe that's the thermogenic effect of caffeine.
No, but that's actually scientifically proven, the NEAT part. It's part of the equation of the total daily energy expenditure. Then, other thing is, you may, I don't know if you play sports, but like I have clients who say, no, I cannot gain weight. And then I look at what they actually do for the, during the day, and they are running 1 hour a day. They are probably going to work on a bike. Again, they're expending lots of calories, and then it's either you eat more or you move less, right?
Okay, so here's an interesting question. Does thinking too much, or does the brain, like everybody says, oh, brain uses a lot of energy, does thinking too much burn calories? I know this sounds like an idiot question, but is there something on that?
Yeah, there's something on that. And yes, the brain is a very expensive organ. Actually, that's why humans are humans. And basically the differentiation from humans with monkeys or other species is that the brain is a very expensive organ energy-wise. But we really don't use that much energy just by thinking more.
Okay.
Like just by being human, your brain will require lots more calories than if you were a dog or any other animal, comparing, you know, species to species. But you will not necessarily burn more calories by studying than if you were going out and doing training, right?
Okay. Got it. And I think this leads me to the next topic that I wanted to sort of pounce on is a lot of people like to do weight training or any sort of resistance training alongside weight loss. Now, is there a benefit to that as a whole, or what do you see? And you guys have a boot camp as well, which I would love to plug in eventually. But I think you guys sort of encourage that. Is that encouraged?
For fat loss, yeah, of course. Like the best thing you can do, which is also a little bit goes against what normal people believe. Well, people who like common sense would have you believe, is that for actual fat loss, it's better to do strength training while dieting than doing cardio.
Yep. And
why?
Go ahead.
Because you were talking about hormones before and how hormones affect fat loss. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So and I was saying, OK, there's calories, but hormones are also important. So by doing strength training is one of the few exercises which actually have an effect on the neuroendocrine system. This means that they actually preps your hormones to become attuned and it makes you like it gives signals to your body to build muscle and to create more build also more dense bones, etc. So in time, it's better long term and medium term than if you were just running.
Yep. And there's
also remember that the more muscle you have, the more calories you're burning passively.
Got it. Yeah, that was going to be my question. Is like, do you burn calories outside of the gym when you're done working out or doing any sort of strength training? And you just answered that question. Sorry, please go ahead.
Yeah, that basically just by seeing someone who has a bigger lean mass than someone who is, let's say, smaller, even if the other person weighs more, the one with the more muscle is likely going to burn more calories.
Got it. So let's talk a little bit about setting some realistic expectations on keto. Now, some people think, as we both have seen it on various occasions, that it seems to be the holy grail that will fix all the problems in the universe. And so what are some of the expectations people should have when they walk into the world of keto and low carb?
Expectations on regards to goals, to what one will achieve. Well,
my direction here is that some people like to think that this is the only way to weight loss, which, as I think you would agree on that, is not the only way. But in other words, what benefits does keto have, and where do people fail? That's where I'm trying to go with.
Yeah, sure. Well, first let's point out that if I were to put an overweight person in a closed room and limit their calories, they will lose weight. Everybody does. That's a fact. That's why metabolic wards exist, and any experiment conducted in a metabolic ward gives the same results. Everybody who eats at a caloric deficit can lose weight, and you can lose weight even if you eat Twinkie Wonders, or you can gain weight even if you eat broccoli. It's going to be easier or harder in one way or another, but yes, calories matter to a point. Calories are not the same. It's not the same, the calories from a broccoli or a chicken, than the calories from a donut. Your body will not use them exactly the same, as I said below, each macro has a purpose. But then, people saying that keto is the only way that to lose body fat is not exactly correct, but it can be the only way for some people. And it's not because keto is magic, but more so because a diet is as effective as the other ends, right? And what gives keto a lot of power is that because your insulin levels are regulated, this takes out a lot of cravings, and then it makes it more sustainable for people to actually stay on the diet. Normally, you see people who do any classic diet is that they starve themselves, last 1 or 2 days on the diet, and then they eat all the calories back and more over the weekend or when they go to a restaurant or so. What keto does is, because first it's a sort of elimination diet, when you take a lot of foods that are very calorically dense and also very, let's call them, well, that raise insulin very easily, and thus you don't gain weight just because insulin is high, but because insulin is high and then you are likely to eat more. And then the combination of what people normally eat on a traditional diet is not, for example, if you eat a hamburger and the fries, it's not just the carbs from the hamburger and the fries, but also the fat that accompanies all that food. When you are probably very high on carbs, the fat you eat that accompanies the carbs is probably going to be just stored in your body as body fat. Unless, of course, you exercise or increase your energy expenditure, and then you will actually burn it, right? So again, the expectation would be you have to approach it as any other diet when you have to be responsible with what you eat. And you also need to review that you are eating whole foods. It's very important to take care of your micronutrient needs, especially sodium, potassium, and magnesium, which are the basic electrolytes. And people just like say, no, I won't really need them. They don't really take care to inform themselves and supplement adequately. And then they may feel the magic or the much publicized keto flu, which happens in about 2 or 3 days after they start the diet, and they start to feel basically super lethargic and tired and with headaches, etc. And it's a combination of carb withdrawal plus electrolyte deficiency.
Got it. So mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No. Basically, that one of the main things people have to check. And then in regards to expectations, well, people start the diet and then some of them lose like 4, 3, even 5 pounds in a week. And then, well, they get, of course, super motivated. But they need to understand that the first week or two of the diet, what you lose is water weight. It's not really fat. You have to keep on the diet to actually start losing body fat.
Got it. So now that we're already over here, a lot of this term gets thrown around all the time, keto adaptation. What exactly does that mean in your words?
Well, there are like three processes, or let's call them steps, to understand what keto adaptation is. And the first is you enter ketosis. And this is basically when your liver is depleted of glycogen to a point, your body starts producing ketones. So this happens normally in 1 day of not eating carbs, at most 2 days, 48 hours. So you are first in ketosis. Then the more time you stay in ketosis, your body will become better at using fatty acids as fuel and then also ketone bodies. So this is the starting process to become fat adapted. This is when you no longer feel tired and you can actually perform well in sports, because your body at first is always dependent on glycogen, on glucose. When you take glucose out of the way, your body, well, has no glucose, so it's going to ask for it. But it doesn't have that, let's call it, I don't know if you're familiar with mitochondria.
Go for it.
Your body doesn't have the adequate number of mitochondria necessary to use fatty acid as fuel, or they're not, let's call it, used to. So over time, in a few weeks, your body gets used to using fatty acids as fuel more efficiently. So that's what it entails to be fat adapted. And then over a couple of more weeks, normally 8 to 12, that's basically 3 months, you can become keto adapted. And that is when your body is fully attuned to using both fatty acids and ketone bodies as energy. And basically the little glucose your body needs is reserved for brain use and a little bit of muscles, but that's about it.
Got it.
So it's just basically a thing of time. And if you really are into ketone adaptation, one should stay in ketosis, not really go in and out as a lot of people do with carb cycling and so, because you're never going to be fully ketogenic in the sense that, because you're still giving the body the other energy substrates, it's still the body will always prefer to use glucose when you put it in the equation, because it's very easy to use and it's metabolically cheap. Your body always wants to survive, so we'll always go back to the easiest fuel to use, right?
Got it. Mm-hmm. So moving to a sort of a controversial topic that I just think needs a little bit of explanation among a lot of people in general. And since I have no affiliation with them, I'm pointing out at the ketone supplements, beta hydroxybutyrate, which is taking over the internet with chaos, and I would like to get to know what your perspective on that matter is, so that we can clear certain things out. If you want to talk about it, that would be amazing. It will help me forward the message as well.
Sure. Using exogenous ketones has merit, but more so for cognitive reasons or to treat certain diseases. They're not really a weight loss product. As we said at the start of the interview, you don't burn fat just because you have ketones. Ketones are a byproduct of fat metabolization. So if you just ingest ketones, then your body will not really burn your own body fat. So that's what people need to understand. And there are very unscrupulous sellers out there who basically are telling lies. Ketones by themselves, exogenous ketones, do not burn body fat. You burn body fat by eating less or doing more exercise.
Got it.
But again, the exogenous ketones do have uses. They're just energy. So they're energy for your brain. They are nootropic. They have uses for those people who actually need higher ketone levels to treat any, unless, let's say, they have seizures and they need them, or they may have a cancer and their doctor suggested to experiment with the use. Of course, they are welcome to do it. Or if you are someone who strength trains or endurance trains and you are already fat adapted, you may experiment with them. I've used them eventually, and I've seen good results with them strength-wise. But again, they are just like any other supplement. They won't really make any, or they don't have any intrinsic magic by themselves.
Okay, so the bottom line here is focus on real foods, focus on your diet, and then if you really want to tinker with it, and if you have the bank account for it, go for
exactly.
It, because they're pretty expensive on a budget, especially considering people in our countries and around the world don't make a whole lot, so I just think that'll be, it can be a bit of a ripoff,
yes.
Depending on the returns that you're getting out of it. No offense to any of the companies, by the way.
No. I think they're great products by themselves. I use them, but again, because I have an objective, which is probably strength training, and I don't use them every day. I use them when I'm going to do like a 2-hour workout with very heavy weights, and I may need a little bit more of an edge.
So,
but,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Okay, what I don't like to see, and I feel unethical, is using these products to tell people they're going to lose weight or that they can go back into ketosis after having a pizza, right? Because they're just lying to them. Like they say they put you into ketosis, and then people think that being in ketosis by itself is what is going to make them burn body fat, right? And the thing is, no, they don't put you into ketosis. They put ketones in your body, which is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you grasp the idea, but that's what those products are doing. Yes, they are giving me energy.
Yeah.
So again, if we go back to what I said before, what ketones are, which are a byproduct of fat metabolization, and basically your body does this or uses this line of thinking. Why milk the cow when I can get the milk for free? Sorry, why buy the cow when I can get the milk for free? You're giving them already the metabolite, which is a ketone body. So the body doesn't have to burn your own body fat to obtain it.
Got it.
So you're making your body lazy.
Yeah. So here's the question, though, which is, I would say, a little bit on the experimental side. What if someone has a high carb diet and they, let's say, are preparing for an event or a certain thing that requires a lot of energy? Could they dual energy source using carbs and ketones, or is that just a myth?
No, they could if they are metabolically flexible and their body knows what to use with ketones. If not, they're just going to pee them like anybody who starts a keto diet. Why do you pee ketones when you start a keto diet? And people use pee sticks when they start to see if they're in ketosis or not. when you start a ketogenic diet and your body's not used to having ketones, it will pee them because it's not using them. It doesn't know what to do with them. So for the body, it's a waste product. Okay. After 2 or 3 weeks, even if you are in ketosis and you use the pee sticks, you will have less, you will maybe not show any ketones in your pee. And it's not because you're not in ketosis anymore. It's basically because your body is now using those ketones as energy.
Yeah, and that's one of the misconceptions about those ketone sticks in general, is that they show the result in the earlier part where, because there's extra that is not being used, I suppose. But down the road, they're like, oh, did we just get kicked out of ketosis? No, you're still in there. It's just not being detected, or it's very low that gets shown around there.
Exactly.
So let's just start to kind of wrap things around, because I have a few minutes as well to... So I had some basic questions from people from my community that were interested. So let's just like do like a rapid fire sort of thing where first question is, what are your thoughts on bulletproof coffee?
If your goal is fat loss, don't do it.
Okay. All right. Let's go for the next one. What is your favorite breakfast?
Normally skip breakfast, but I love breakfast foods. And basically that's eggs with whatever.
Okay. And what is your attitude towards ketone testing?
Chase results, not ketones.
Awesome. So how much of a deficit is good for weight loss?
It depends on your actual body fat percentage, but for most people, 20%. If you have a very high body fat percentage, you could tolerate probably a 25%. If you have very low body fat, let's say 10 to 12 or so, probably 10 or 15% deficit, depends.
Okay, so it's all dependent. Next question, for bulking, how much, what kind of macro formula do you use?
You don't need that much calories to bulk. Probably 10% above your TDE is more than enough. For most people, this is around 150 to 150 calories, not more. And the extra comes a little bit from a higher carb intake and fat.
Okay, got it. Do you use any supplements? If yes, what kind?
Creatine, sometimes protein powder, citrulline malate, and sometimes exogenous ketones.
Awesome. What about the pre-workout? Oh, I think you've already pretty much mentioned
pre-workout. Yeah, that's in the pre-workout. The creatine, I do use MCT oil as a pre-workout as well some days. But basically, that's the main stack. I may add some things about, if you look also in ketogains.com in the supplement section, I have a whole write-up of what I suggest and some of the things that I actually use.
Okay. Do you use a post-workout?
I prefer pre.
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Pre-workout. Yeah, I prefer pre-workout.
But no protein shake afterwards or none of that stuff?
No, it's actually better before.
Oh.
Because, yeah, people forget about digestion. So you want it as close as a metabolic window, which is also a myth. Well, have everything pre.
Oh, okay.
It really doesn't matter for, like, in the end. It's a thing of preference.
Okay. And what are your thoughts on the anabolic window?
I just said it. It's a it's a myth.
Okay.
The window lasts as little as 8 hours for highly trained individuals. I'm talking Olympic level athletes. And as little as 72 hours for someone who isn't trained. So really it doesn't matter when you eat.
Okay, got it. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you, you're a leader yourself. You're benchmarking a lot of this movement towards a healthy lifestyle. What is your vision for the future, and what kind of message would you like to give out to everybody?
First, question everything and try to learn as much as possible by yourself. Always ask why. Don't be content with just getting one answer. Try to look for sources. Try to look for another side of the story and validity. And this is why I think there's this misinformation about nutrition and training nowadays. Like people, mostly everything that people know about nutrition now, or they used to know, is wrong. And it's just a bit, because it's been repeated for so long that it became a truth. For example, that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, or that you have to eat every 3 or 4 hours. Those have no real, like nothing to support them. And if you don't follow them, there's nothing bad going to happen to you.
Okay.
But if you go and look for the actual sources and understand the whys, you will realize that it really doesn't matter.
Got it. So last of all, how can people reach out to you? Do you want to plug something here?
Sure. Well, basically everything you see Keto Gains on the internet is us. So the easiest way to contact us is via ketogains.com. But if you want a more direct approach, you can go to our Facebook group. Just go into Facebook and type Keto Gains and ask to join our group.
Okay.
Basically, that's it.
And also your boot camp, by the way. I want to do it myself. How much? How soon are we looking at? What's the next one?
The next one starts in 3 weeks, and it's a 6-week program where we it's basically a small course in nutrition and training that lasts for 6 weeks, done online, virtual. We teach you how to train. We teach you a little bit of a nutrition.
And again, it's friendly to beginners who know nothing about weight training.
It caters to all levels. You can be a 100% beginner in nutrition and training, or you can be an intermediate or advanced or even elite athlete. And you will find it challenging in a way because the training caters to everyone.
And it can be done anywhere by people across the globe.
Exactly. We have people from everywhere in the world.
Okay, fantastic. I will definitely recommend anybody who comes up to me and says, I want to get into the keto lifestyle and do weight training or resistance training or whatever they have as a goal, I'll send them your way because I trust you guys. And thank you so much, Luis, for showing up to this podcast. You are an amazing human being and you have no idea how many people you're inspiring, including myself, on this journey to help other human beings as well. Last words by any chance or... Is this it?
No, just like I said, I always question everything. And, well, see you on board.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Luis, you're awesome. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and leave us a review if you liked it. You can check out our products at www.ketogeek.com and use our coupon code KGLAUNCH, all caps, for a $5 off of all our food products. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And if you want to join our community, we have a growing Facebook group as well. Till next time.